On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Tall Can Audio podcast. Make sure you're following along on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. Subscribe wherever you're listening. My name's Matt. Rob is out in Canada. What's happening today, man?
Well, Matt, it's a banner day. It's a banner day, Matt. I went out and got my first ever flu shot or flu vaccination, whatever you want to.
Well, you'll have a tail by the morning.
Like an actual tale?
Yeah, or I think that's a story. What I hear, man. The vaccines are
okay.
Either way.
That's, what I was going to say, I already went and had a seat, and I've gotten rid of that tale.
Great.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I was anticipating the shot in the deltoid, right?
Mm-hmm.
The little, and that was it was the nasal mist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was concerned, because Monday is a heavy kettlebell day. And I didn't want to, you know, be sore, because really I can only imagine when you're that heavily muscled.
Oh God! They can just spasm out of control.
The pain may be fierce, right?
Uh huh.
Some of those softer creatures, maybe no problems, right? But anyways, I was very impressed with the setup.
Yeah, when I got mine a month or two ago, they still were hitting you in the arm, so that wasn't offered. I've actually never heard of that, the nasal one, so I have no idea what you got.
Well, what they said was, we'll see if you are eligible for it.
Right.
And so you had to run through a questionnaire, and so, you know, at the end,
you're approved.
Rob's good to go.
First thing you've ever been pre-approved for.
I was just going to say, without somebody else, you know, backing me up for credit purposes or whatever it is, you know. Yeah, so I felt I strutted out of there a little taller.
Although coming in, that may be the vaccine.
Yeah, walking in, I'm standing there filling out the form, and another guy comes up, and he's like, "Excuse me, sir. If you don't mind me saying, your left shoe is ridiculously untied."
I'm like, what
do you mean ridiculously untied? And he's like, well, it's not just loose a bit. Like, it's out there. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure what your Velcro shoes look like, but occasionally these do come undone. And so we had a little fun, that guy and I.
Sounds like it.
Yes.
He's now face down in the gutter outside the... I heard you crack yours. I want to ask you about that in a sec, because I'm going to be getting on to the same thing. But I have in front of me just a taste of something new from the LCBO, from 40 Creek. And there's a Twitter account I follow, mostly craft beer takes, and highly recommend, though. It's @DrunkPokeroo, and he's got a little YouTube channel as well. And the other day, he was reviewing the Nanaimo Bar Cream from 40 Creek. And that speaks to me in a very big way. I love a good Nanaimo Bar. And so now, there was a bit of a hunt. It wasn't at many stores. It wasn't the closest one turned out to be way out in the boons of Farhaven. And this is the first time I'm trying it, and but I'm anticipating good things, man.
Well, you have a sip on that, mm-hmm. and it's interesting because way out there in Bee Haven, that's an A store they have out there, which for those of you who are familiar, those are the big stores that carry just about everything, right? So that's a good place. That's obviously a logical place to find it. What are your initial thoughts, Matt?
About what I would have expected. You get a Nanaimo Bar vibe, but really it's like any other kind of sweet, you know, liqueur, cream, or whatever, right? Hard to differentiate, but very sweet, obviously.
Okay, and so doubling back, it's a Nanaimo Bar cream, whiskey cream.
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I sort of obviously blacked out on the cream, part, and just thought it was like a 40 Creek flavored whiskey.
Right. No, it's more of a, I think most people would put it in their hot chocolate or something maybe or whatever, but I just grabbed a little bit here in a little tumbler and wanted to sip on it a little bit while we went.
And, over ice?
Yep.
Okay.
And, the other one we got going, we're into day 6 now of the Nita Advent calendar. Before we get to today's, what have you thought so far?
I have been most impressed with the coconut cream pie, yes, golden ale from Five Paddles at a Whippy.
Fantastic.
I was moved to tweet at them. Right? And so to me, for the second year in a row.
Normally you save that for like Mitch Marner and what else you're annoyed with that day.
Well, see, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that Twitter guy who only takes to Twitter when something is negative.
Right.
Right. And so to me, if you recall, Matt, and you may not instantly recall what Five Paddles did last year.
No.
They did the Brother Ian's Belgian Strong.
Okay.
And I remember it because it was the most distinct thing in the calendar last year. That was the one that had notes of cinnamon stick and orange. It was 9.5.
Ooh, nice.
And they said, you know, you can drink this heated as like a mead or whatever, or you can just drink it cold. And so you did not like it.
No, probably not.
But I loved it for just for its, you know, something to sip, you know, post work, a little shareability to it. And it's different. Like to me, Five Paddles in the last two calendars, so I didn't go in the first year.
Right.
They have put out something different,
mm-hmm.
not just, hey, this is my New England style IPA, which everybody else is doing. Although this year it seems to be everybody wants to do a session IPA.
Yeah, 3 out of 5 fucking days so far.
Yeah. So easily, and as I tweeted at Five Paddles, I'm like, is it possible that something could be coconut creamy and refreshing?
Right.
Because to me, that's what that was. It had a distinct coconut sort of vanilla start, but it didn't leave you with that. It sort of finished beer-like. I was very impressed with it.
Yeah, that one is probably my favorite thus far as well, although I also really liked the amber that kicked us off on day one from Nita. The blue
squared?
Yeah, and really enjoyed that one. And then, the first IPA on the second, that was a really juicy one. I think it was from Whitewater. I can't remember now for sure.
Yep.
It was okay. But we then went like I said, it was 3 out of 5 days of IPAs. And on day 5, I didn't really care for day 5s. I think I was spent on like, all right, enough. I get it. You all make an IPA. So I was happy to see something new today.
And it's the session IPA too, right? Which, and we've talked about it, and I've happened to run into a couple of the Common Good. I had a Common Good session IPA. I had Brock Street session IPA, right? And so now in terms of Junction City yesterday, and then the Whitewater one the day before that, and you're like, good Lord, man. And because a session IPA is traditionally a lower alcohol. The Whitewater one was still above 5, which is rare now in terms of comparison to a normal New England style guy. But Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm good with it now. Like, can we? But it does seem to be the move of the year, right? Everybody seems to be wanting to give you this. You like an IPA?
Yeah.
You want a little lower alcohol? No, man. I'm looking to get shit faced, and I want the alcohol.
Well, because I remember that was my feedback after year one. Enough, like, give me something a little more festive. Give me something a little more seasonal. You know, lean into the time of year a little bit. And maybe it was all in my head, but I felt last year like they did that a little bit. There was IPAs in there. There's always going to be. But there was also, you know, something called the Winter Warmer, I remembered. I really liked that one. And, you know, a couple of darker ones like that. The fact that we've started out here 3 out of 5 days on IPA is making me a little bit nervous as we move through this. But maybe as we get closer to the actual day, things will look a little darker, man. So what's your first impression of today's, the invisible friend from, where did we say that was from? Grain and Grit out of
Grain
Hamilton.
And Grit. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And now it says it's juicy, hazy, and fruity. I'm not really getting any of that. I find it to be pedestrian.
Okay.
Is probably where I would go. It's not offensive in any way. It's just...
this one they're saying is an American pale ale, right? Not an IPA. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. No. And it comes in about 5.1, I believe.
Yep.
So it's got a little bit of something, but it's not bad. It's not, it's okay.
All right. Well, I've still got, honestly, as I take my first sip, a little bit of sweet Nanaimo on my,
on my tongue.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm not sure if I talked about this last week, but I have a bottle of Reunion Moonshine, which comes at a top shelf out of Perth. And so it is, it's a whiskey cream. And so I cracked it and I put it in my coffee like I would with an Irish cream. And I was super unimpressed with it. It had sort of a thin flavor.
Right.
The flavor was fine, but it wasn't as creamy or as rich as I would with a Bailey's or a Carol Ann's. But I put it over ice, at the end of the day, probably last Sunday. And I took it down over ice and I found it to double the creaminess and it made it 100% better in my opinion. So when you said you were drinking your Nanaimo bar over ice, yeah, to me, that's absolutely, that's Matt. It's very Matt.
For sure it is. Matt loves the sweet stuff.
Yeah. I'm drinking a Nanaimo bar over ice.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, for sure. Bam. So anyways, just worth noting the reunion whiskey cream from Top Shelf, also worth taking a look at.
This unfortunately doesn't have any of the, and I'm talking about the Nanaimo bar now, and none of the sting. Like there's nothing to it. You could go and just grab that and spend the day drinking it with no idea that you were going to have a problem until much later on, right? Like
we love those.
Yeah, for sure. So
except when we don't.
Before we get to some of the business we got coming up, I wanted to ask you a question because I had this conversation on Saturday with a couple of listeners on Twitter as I was kind of searching around for Christmas gift ideas for some young people in my life. And I wondered, because I guess the most common video game system right now, although the PS5 did just come out and the new Xbox, whatever, but a lot of the video game consoles are straight download now, right? There's no disc drive. You don't go buy somebody. And so maybe only for the person giving it, I don't know, but do you think, like, there was something kind of cool on Christmas about opening up your new video game, whereas now I don't know what you're supposed to do, right? Like, here's a download code. You know, when we're done here, you can go and it feels like it would take some of the fun out of it. Or how do you go about it? Like someone else had suggested, because I was looking for my niece at maybe Mario Party. Do you get like a couple of stuffed Mario characters that they would open and say, by the way, there's, you know, like it feels like it takes some of the fun out of it that there's nothing to unwrap there.
Yeah, like what are you doing? You're gonna send along an Xbox credits,
right?
Or whatever those are, right? It comes in a card, I think, yep. Or you can do any of those sorts of. But you're right. Now I like the idea, right?
Of
a couple little stuffed things, and they can open it up, and the card is stuck to the ass of one of the right? And whatever. And you go, yeah, and that's so you can do this and that. And so there's something they can look at and hold and unwrap. Because, yeah, we all know kids, especially the age you're talking about,
yeah,
is they want something tangible that they can put their hands on. And if it leads to something else, that's awesome, right? But they want to have, hey, that's from Uncle Matt.
Right.
Right? They want that idea of something under the tree. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Well, it just feels like something's been taken away a little bit. Although, at the same time, I do remember, like, if you were at your aunt and uncle's on Christmas and you got a video game, it was now just, like, hell. Like, can we leave? Like, I got to get home.
Let's book it.
Yeah, like, I got to get home to the Nintendo, man. Like, what are we fucking doing here?
Yeah, and what are you blowing to, right? That old game with the Nintendo, you got nothing. I got to, it's all download now. What's happening here?
Yeah, so.
I feel the younger generation is completely cheated out of an experience we all had.
And, like, I guess for adults, like, I've had a few Christmases where I've, like, woke up in the morning and I'll have, like, your sister has bought you an iTunes, has bought you a book on Kindle or whatever, and yeah, it's in your email, and that's cool, but you don't really care that you didn't get to unwrap it, whereas, I don't know, it just feels different now for kids, like, there'd be some sort of, I guess they don't know that they're missing out, right? Like, this is the way it's probably been for them for a while, but it does seem strange to me.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And I remember you got my kids, I don't know, a decade ago, at least, right? But you got the, well, it was a couple of years in a row you had given them games. And one was the Mario Baseball.
Yeah, that's right.
And honestly, I used to crush them at it. Get on.
Dad's just bringing the heat inside. Yeah,
but no, I used to love to go with, you'd go with one of those little, I can't remember which one it was, but there's mushrooms, one of the little mushrooms, and they would do this lob ball style, you know, where the ball would go 40 feet in the air and it would land like right on the plate. And so you'd try and time it, you'd see the shadow coming down, and you're like, so I used to just drop those. It took about 10 seconds for each pitch to,
right,
from release to land. So yeah, my kids used to pitch the remote.
That sucks. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Too bad, Dad. You're out.
As we sit here and record, a couple of interesting anniversaries. This one I bring up, it's probably the least, well, to me, it's maybe the most interesting. Who can you name, just take a guess, at the oldest player to ever score for the Montreal Canadiens?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be surprising,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Shea Weber.
No, although he has lots of time left on his contract to be that player at some point. It's Sergei Gonchar at 40 years of age.
Oh, I'm surprised.
In 2014 on this day, as like I said, as we sit here and record.
Gonch!
Yeah, well, and he kind of made his, what, like, there's sort of that forgotten era of Gonchar. He was a Sen, he was a Hab. I think he briefly got a second crack in Pittsburgh.
His capital?
He was a Capital way back in it, but that's like where I remember him from. Like his being.
I think of him as a Penguin. For
do
some
you?
Reason.
Yeah. Okay. So just interesting when you think of all the names over the years and all the Hall of Famers and all the cups and everything, that it's just this kind of brief stop Sergei Gonchar made and holds, well, that record.
And it's not really surprising, although I obviously took a big crazy swing and a miss on the guess. It's not surprising because when you look at the sort of the history books and you know, guys like Beliveau and Geoffrion and Richard and Henri Richard and mm-hmm. Guy Lafleur, and you go blah, 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 blah. The career length was not what it you know, is today or
true.
Was,
yep.
You know, through the sort of 80s, 90s and the 2000s. I think it's trending back in that direction as the game gets faster and faster. But yeah, a lot of those guys didn't have the crazy point totals because they didn't play forever.
Yeah, I suppose. It just caught, like, I had forgotten that he ever even played there, let alone might hold this record.
Right? Well, I don't remember. I have no recollection of him. And so he was in Ottawa before that.
Yeah. Two years, 10 mil, I believe.
Yeah. And it was great. He was in that 2013 year where they beat Montreal, which is clearly where Montreal was like,
oh, we need that guy.
Well, and that's how you end up getting, they get Juno and Bonk and Dackel and after us, right? They all just sort of
move down
they're
the
Trevor,
highway.
Yeah, they're Trevor Timmins, you know, they all go down from Ottawa down the line, right? That's where you go when you're past your prime.
And set oldest player records.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do, man, when you're
The other notable anniversary as we sit here, the Ottawa Senators, 30 years ago today, are granted their franchise from the National Hockey League. There's been a couple of videos posted on Twitter. The mustache game around Ottawa was strong in 1990. Man.
Well, okay, and yeah, it's the late Tom Selleck effect, right? In terms of in the 70s into the 80s, my dad rocked as an RCMP officer, rocked a strong stash too, right? It was just it was the deal, and I see the stash is making a bit of a comeback right now, and I think it's terrible and it should stop. And if I ever change my mind, Matt, like in the next couple of years, sort of start to cut the goat down.
Yeah, we'll be saving this.
I am rocking a crazy wilderness beard right now. It's untouched since March of last year. My mother is balking seriously. I can also rock a serious man bun right now, too. The hair is super long. But yeah, it's what's really interesting, and we don't have to get into the details of the whole thing, but it's amazing that the city has a franchise, first and foremost, right? If you look at...
Certainly right now.
Well, yeah. Okay, well, we can get into... You see that article that he did with the Suns, Bruce Garriott, and Eugene Melnyk? You know, what
fresh off
fucking,
another appearance on the Bob McCowan podcast.
What a wingnut, man. Like, honest to God, you're like, if... Anyways, we can get into that later.
Yeah, sure.
The awarding of the franchise, and it's funny because smaller Canadian cities, Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Quebec City, they all sort of came into the league through the WHL.
Nefarious circumstances.
Yeah, like they sort of got absorbed in from a smaller league, right? Whereas in terms of giving a city this size a franchise, it's a bit of a coup, right? And so... One of the interesting stories you hear is I was listening to Cyril Leader the other day on Friday of last week, and he was saying, you know, they put together a 400-page leather-bound book to go in with the application. So apparently they hit the ball out of the park on their presentation and everything. He says they got like 30 minutes notice to be in the ballroom of the Breakers Hotel, and he goes, we wandered in. It was Firestone, Sexton, and Cyril Leader himself. They were in this 10,000 square foot ballroom, standing in the middle of it by themselves. And he goes, the door busts open, and in comes Phil Esposito and the Tampa Bay crew. And he goes, Cyril says, first thing in my mind was their presentation sucked. We're in the losers' room. And on the flip side, Phil Esposito was thinking to himself, hey, Ottawa's here. We're in the winner's room. So, and it's funny, anybody who's had their kids in minor hockey where they go through the whole balancing process,
you're around.
You're like, oh, man, we're in the shitty bubble here, man. We got to work our way out of here. So everybody has that feeling of, hey, man, we're in the good group. Right. Hey, we're in the bad group. And so it's funny that on that same moment, the two different reactions to the two different teams looking at the other guy going, oh, we're in the shitty group, man. There's Esposito and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Boom. So anyways, that was super interesting. And the other interesting thing to come out of it was, I guess by all accounts, the NHL was going to take the two teams that could scratch out the $50 million check.
Yep.
And of note that the other team, the other Canadian team, because the rumor had it that they were going to award one Canadian franchise and one American franchise. And so the other Canadian franchise that was in the running would have been Hamilton, which was backed by the Tim Hortons ownership.
But heavily opposed by Buffalo and Toronto.
Yeah, well, and not only that, the Hamilton group said to the NHL, here's our presentation, blah, blah, blah. Can we negotiate the $50 million? Mm. Yeah, and then the selection committees were huddled up, and they're like, oh, fuck that guy. Forget about it, man. Those guys are out. And the thing
is... This is pre-Gary.
Yeah. And $50 million,
yeah,
which I know in 1990 is not chump change, but it's come a long way, right?
It's 10 times of, that for Vegas.
Yeah, and 13 times that for Seattle. I think 650 is what they're talking about, right?
Damn.
But just the idea that if there was ever a chance that Hamilton was going to get a team, that was it.
Yeah.
Right? And if you look at you know, and I know it's right in the Leafs wheelhouse there, but it hurts Buffalo more than it hurts the Leafs if they ever put a team in Hamilton.
Yep. No,
that will that will cripple the amount of people who go, yeah, let's go to Buffalo, man. Cheap beers, cheap tickets.
And those people don't grow on trees at the best of times. No one's excited to go to Buffalo.
Hockey games, Taylor Hall. Hockey games alone, my friend. That's but again, if you're going to scratch out an $8 million check, yeah. I'm going to Buffalo, man.
Well, yeah, you'll remember, he may have been the last guest we had on before the shutdown was Chris Stevenson. I would have been right in there. We talked to him about this, and he said, and it's come up again as they've been discussing the anniversary, the thing Ottawa did right was just say yes to everything. When they came back and said, well, we might need this, yep. Out going, we'll figure it out later. Just say yes. Yeah. Give them the answer we need.
Well, because they didn't have the $50 million. No. But they're like, yeah, we'll do it.
We'll get it, yeah.
And you're like, all right, give it to those guys. Look at those go-getters, right? Yeah, and CJ was spot on.
Yep.
And if CJ's listening, we have not forgotten.
We're back.
The 17th green beer, right? I haven't forgotten that. And also, while I'm talking about beer, this has started to grow on me, this... it's got a nice little grapefruit sort of kick at the beginning now. It's subtle, right? But it's right at the front of my teeth. And then...
Yeah, you're getting a little bit more of the fruitiness that they described in the...
And that may just be, I pulled it right out of the fridge before we started. But yeah, it's got a nice little subtle citrus kind of a thing right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, that you're right, though. That is the deal was, hey, man, we don't know how it's going to work out. But we're going to bite off the biggest chunk that we can, and then we'll worry about all that down the road, right?
And they did. Like, there were issues down the road. I can't remember why, but a few weeks ago, I was just going through YouTube and looking at old Ottawa news clips of there's no money. And, like, we're a year or two into the franchise, and they're, you know, we can't afford these free agents, and, you know, maybe this is too big business. We're like, you just got it. How shocked can you be?
You're still playing out of the 10,000 seat Civic Center, and they hadn't built the Palladium,
right?
Soon to be Correll Center, soon to be Scotiabank Place, soon to be.
It'll always be the Correll Center.
Well, honestly, I was gonna call it the Correll Center the other day, and I'm like, that's not right. The Palladium. You're like, yeah, okay, go one further back, right? Old guy.
I think it was still Correll Center during those Leaf battles. So I think
probably it as that. But, and they and it's interesting because I don't think, you know, had they not got a team in 90, they're never getting a team again. Like, this is not a place that you're.
It'd have to be the same way Winnipeg got theirs back, right? Like,
yeah, somebody sliding in here.
Yeah, like there's a market here that we're reasonably comfortable with. It wasn't high on our list, but it's better than these owners in Atlanta who are just throwing the keys on the fucking table and say, it's your problem now, right? Like, that'd have to be the way. Well, that's what happened in Winnipeg.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, leave your keys in the TV set.
Right.
We're out of here.
They just said, like, we're done. We're done with your promises. We're done with whatever. Do whatever you want. We will no longer be paying, paychecks come the 30th of June. So it's your problem now. And Winnipeg came knocking very much the same way, right? While what's his name there, Jim Balsillie, was running around breaking every rule and rubbing Gary's face in bankruptcy courts and shit like that. The people in Winnipeg stayed quiet, you know, kept telling them we're interested. We have an arena, we have the money, just, you know, kowtow to Gary. And, you know, eventually that's how it worked, right?
We do know that's what the TPC loves.
Yes. The tiny, right, perfect commissioner.
He loves to have people kowtow. This is it. What can I do? And it's funny because I agree with you that there's no way in this day and age that Ottawa would be able to sort of leverage a half a billion dollar or a $650 million franchise fee. But why do I feel differently about Quebec City, that they're not willing to use that as a transfer location? That they're willing to try and that seems like a more likely spot to try and pluck them for.
Nah, I disagree, just because I think that Gary likes to have one in his back pocket in case of emergency. If the Panthers, if the Hurricanes, if the whatever decide, fuck it, we're out, he's got to have an empty spot somewhere to park them. And so
Kansas City.
could be, but I think it's Quebec. I think that's what because he likes to get his expansion money and all that stuff in places that are going to improve his American TV deal and all these sorts of things.
Yeah, all right.
We don't know for sure. I just think he likes having that one in his back pocket where fuck it, fine, we'll park somebody over there and
fuck it,
let Videotron pay for it or whatever they're called. They're Quebec or
play out of the Pepsi Center.
Speaking of Quebec. They have shut down the OHL and the WHL decided we're going to wait. The OHL was waiting for February. I can't remember if the Dub did get up and going or if they were postponed as well.
Nope, but they hadn't yet started either.
The Q said, fuck it, we're going, and fired it up. And then within not too long at all, just a couple of weeks, they were having trouble around Quebec. The maritime bubble at the time was still holding. It is now burst as well. But there was talks that some of the Quebec-based teams were going to have to bubble in Quebec City just to catch up. They were going to bring a bunch of them in and play a series of games because they'd fallen so far behind. And eventually, they just decided, you know what, for the month of December at least, we're out. We're done. We're shutting it down. Everybody go home. I can't say I'm shocked, but I actually was shocked that they decided they were going ahead. Not at all shocked it didn't work.
Well, and I think the idea for them to go ahead, I think most people looked at it and went, huh, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Right? I can't think of too many people who thought that was a great idea.
Right.
And to me, it's no coincidence that the reason the maritime bubble burst was, I believe, due to Quebecer infiltration into New Brunswick.
Always is, man.
Yeah,
and again, nothing but trouble.
At the risk of, you know, disenfranchising more of our Quebec listeners. Yeah, to me, that's
just
what
a
it
blank
is.
Then, spot on the map when I look at where our downloads come from.
Look at that black hole in so many ways right there in the middle of this country. So again, sorry, good French listener.
Mm-hmm.
The three of you, or two, now one. Yeah, it's to me, it's one of those things where, and when you floated this idea to me, I was like, oh yeah, right. They were still going in certain parts, but honestly, they had the, as you said, the maritime bubble teams were going, playing against each other, yeah. Right? The Screaming Eagles, the Mooseheads, the Wildcats, right? They sort of had this thing going out there where they were going, but then really early, a bunch of other teams shut down, but you still had, you know.
It looked like the Cardinals, remember, and the Marlins.
Yeah.
Half the leagues played 30 games. The other, like, there's teams who played 8 or
6.
12. Yeah.
Yes. You're
like,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so when you sent that, I'm like, what's newsworthy about this? Because to me, it seems like forever they've been. Now, you're right. They have mothballed the entire thing.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where you're like, it's such a, and I know you have been really, you know, much more in favor of not doing sports,
mm-hmm.
You know, and a crazy big sports head like you are, right? Like you love your sports as yep. much or more than anybody else I know. And so the fact that you have been heavily advocating not doing it, I shake my head at the queue for as soon as it went sideways. You should have mothballed the whole thing. You look at what's happening in the NFL, right, with what they've done, and it's a farce, right, in terms of you want to talk about, they're like, well, we got to keep rolling through here. Yeah, you have ruined your own product integrity.
Well, how about the Broncos last weekend? Had no quarterbacks, so they roll some fucking guy in there, and at the last, just, you know, hope it goes well. I think they ended up putting, 3 points on the board?
I think they got blanked.
Maybe. And then the Steelers game that got postponed from Thanksgiving
Thursday
to Wednesday before they finally get to play it. Now that fucks over both opponents. So instead of it just being the two teams that had to push back to Wednesday, their next week's teams, like, you're going to go play two other teams, so they're going to have to wait. That shortens their next week. Like, it just becomes a mess, and they're just pushing the fuck through. They're just like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Baltimore got pushed to Wednesday, and then they were set to play the Thursday night game.
Yes.
Like, they were supposed to be the next night.
So that gets pushed at least till Monday. I didn't even see where that ended up getting dropped.
Yeah, but, I think Tuesday.
But that fucks their opponent's schedules and then their opponents the next week. Like,
yeah, and it's interesting because, as you say, it's the super cavalier approach to masking,
mm-hmm.
right? With the whole idea that you had the four quarterbacks for Denver all in the same room, all sitting together watching video, none of them masked.
Yep. Oh, shit, and, they're all sick.
Well, and then this is it, right? And if you go, hey, man, we're really in the same bubble or whatever it is. Okay, whatever, right? So I can kind of get behind that or I cannot get behind that. But then you go, oh, now one's sick and now we're all quarantined.
Right.
And I think the best idea I've heard yet, and I'm not sure if anybody's going to implement it, is go, you have four quarterbacks on your list. You need to be quarantining one of those guys all the time.
There are teams, I think the Bills did that from the beginning. There are some teams, like, it's amazing to me that that wasn't in the league mandate, but there are some teams who had the foresight to go, okay, this seems pretty dumb. At least one of our quarterbacks at all times will be away from the rep. You're on Zoom for this meeting,
Zoom
man.
Meetings.
Right?
Yes, exactly. You know, you do your reps, you do your whatever. You maybe you have a little, like the Jays did with their Rochester.
Yeah, like a
taxi
separate
squad.
Yes.
You have just a group of guys who are working out on their own, but they're in their own little bubble.
Right. Yeah. No, it's
say,
insane.
And you say, hey, you fourth string quarterback, guess what? You want to play this year? You got to live in Rochester, or whatever it is, right?
Sure.
You got to be in this spot, and that's it.
And like, and just, no wiggle room. Like the NFL's like you can't sign somebody. You can't. What? It's just sorry, man. What does that do to your fucking product? Who wants to watch that? Like,
well, nobody. When you run a guy who played, who was quarterback for five games in college, like 4 years ago, hadn't taken a snap since, and is
any given Sunday, man. Yeah, no.
And is a practice roster receiver,
yes,
or tight end or whatever. It's like not even like he is. And so to me, that is you are now damaging, and. The integrity of your product. Gary Bettman was talking about, we want to run a playoff, which, you know, with best of seven series, right? We want to keep it as best as we can, you know, homogeneous to the rest of our playoffs, right? We don't want to ruin the absolute integrity of our product. To me, the NFL, in the pursuit of finishing on time, has made a bit of a mockery of their sterling product. And it's funny, when I was talking about, you know, bubbling and going to places where I hearken back to way back in the spring when you and I were talking about when the idea first came up of bubbles and whatever else. And I'm like, man, right away I thought of, put it where the University of North Dakota is, right? You know, somewhere out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere where nobody's going to go. And you go, oh, wait, you mean that place now that has easily the highest, you know, by population.
Yeah.
Case count in North America. Okay, bad idea, Rob.
Well, even like just today, our Western correspondent was, you know, sarcastically pointing out that Connor McDavid was coming back home after being in Arizona practicing with Matthews or whatever, and can't believe he'd go to Arizona and, you know, a COVID hotspot. And I'm like, you're welcoming him home to Alberta. It's worse. Like, it's on fire. I don't know if it's worse, but...
Well,
they're running neck and neck case numbers with us, with a quarter of the population.
Yeah, no, that is a fiery hotspot, right? And if you, and again, that to me was a super interesting follow on Twitter, right? When they were tweeting out, right, that Alberta was looking for support from the feds.
Yes,
it's nice that they got somebody other than Jason Kenney to ask, because clearly Kenney couldn't possibly speak out of the other side of his mouth after spending the last, whatever, year blasting the feds for,
right?
Yeah, you can't turn around and go, oh yeah, can
help
I get
us
a little bit? Yeah. And again, this is, to me, I dear Western correspondent, do not, I it's a serious issue that's happening out there, and I don't, but yeah, people underneath the story are saying, yeah, but I can still go to the casino and the bars and gather at large church gatherings.
Well, and that was it. Like, I just found it amusing that Connor was now safely back in Alberta, away from the virus, I guess. But that was one of the reasons to bring up the queue, is it didn't work. They've had to shut it down. We talked on one of the last shows we did about Friedman saying one of the reasons that the NHL wanted to get up and going was just go, right? You're going to have trouble. You're going to have teams that get shut down. You're going to have hot spots. Leave room at the end a couple of weeks before the playoffs where you can play a few games if you have to cancel them or postpone them or whatever. Leave yourself some space, but just go. And I wonder now, as we are, man, neck deep in the second wave, much worse than the first ever was. They want to travel. Do you still think we're in line? Like, are they just going to put their heads down like everybody else and just, like, money aside, we know they're arguing over how they're going to pay this thing, but do you think they're just going to fucking still, fuck it, let's go?
I do. Yeah. I do. I really do. And it's funny, there still is, as of recording here, sort of late Sunday afternoon, there still is no, you know, concrete news, but mm-hmm. you're hearing there is plenty of smoke, right, in yep. terms of that they've sort of cooled the escrow issue, mm-hmm. right, where the league was looking at asking for a bump to 25 from the 20 and deferring more money, that it's really coming down to more deferring, right, that they've sort of settled on. Behind the scenes, this is what I'm hearing, at yep. least, right? You know, you got LeBron and Saravelli, and these guys are speaking about this, that, man, but they're still pushing for what, January 15th now?
Yep.
No, and the league has not said they're moving off the January 1st, despite the fact that it is the 6th of December right now, and
you'd need to be in camp in like a week.
Yeah, it ain't happening, right? So, but January 15th, and they're still pushing for not 48, but 56 games, right? So I absolutely think that with vaccines in sight mm-hmm. in the new year, I absolutely believe that they will.
Yeah, I think I've read in a few places now, heard of it, that bubbles are back on the table. Maybe to start the season, you would report for 2 or 3 weeks to a bubble and then hope that, because here's the problem that, you know, everybody sees what's happening now and what happened even here after Canadian Thanksgiving. We just cleared American Thanksgiving. After every holiday, there has been a spike. People are not listening. They're gathering. They're doing their family things, whatever. The 2 weeks into January, what do you think that's going to look like in terms of case numbers on both sides of the border? It's going to be nuts. So do you have to, at least for the first couple of weeks, bubble in each division bubbles somewhere, play for 3 weeks, and then hope that, you know, then you can start to travel. And even that might buy them some time in terms of different jurisdictions. And you know, the 49ers are playing out of Arizona right now because California has said, yeah, you're not doing it here. Yeah. Does that mean the Sharks are going to be following them to Arizona too, right? Like, well, probably.
Yeah, and they were talking about Vegas already,
yeah.
right, in terms of the Sharks looking at Vegas as an option. And I think whatever's going to happen, you're going to see, because it's a matter of time before all three California teams yep. are shut down, right? And I think you'll probably see, and I think it was Pierre McGuire talking about it, saying that Anaheim and San Jose are already looking at pairing up, right, in terms of,
right,
sharing a venue, whatever that looks like, off days, what, you know, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of trying to balance this out. But yeah, no, I think, where would you bubble? And if you're the players and
well, that's, and it, like, even Manitoba and, now is getting, well, crushed, and
for,
like,
sure. And you look and you start to look at you as the players. You know, you go, ah, the NHLPA, do you have a lot of faith in and trust in the NHL? And you go, fuck, man, I just signed the CBA there. And if you look at Herb Brooks' article from a couple of weeks ago.
Larry Brooks,
yeah. Not Herb Brooks. That's right. Herb Brooks is dead. Sorry about that, coach.
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Yeah. If you look at Brooks' article where he said he believes that Gary was fully intended to do this the whole time.
Yep.
Get him in the playoffs bubble. Going. Yep. And not deliver on all the promises in the bubble.
Yep.
But get through that. Now, again,
say whatever you need to say back in the spring. Get him into the bubble. Get it done to finish that season. And then, fuck, whatever happens after happens. And I can remember saying to you, we talked about it on the show, it's going to be way easier to finish that last season than to start this one. You're not going to bubble 31 teams all in one place for an entire season. I didn't know what to expect out of a second wave. I knew that I'd read, like everybody else, that one was coming. I didn't know it would look like this. It's a mess, man. But yeah, that they don't trust Gary. And the one thing that Gary does have on his side, and you can deal with it however you want, but he's not renegotiating in the sense that the players are entitled to 50% of the money.
Yeah.
And there's no money. So we can give it all to you now, but it just means next year you're giving it all right back, or we lower the cap or whatever. So I get what he's saying. It's not technically a renegotiation. It's a renegotiation on the terms we agreed to deal with this, but it's not a renegotiation on the system. There's no money. Right. You're going to get way too much, and you're just going to have to give it all back. We might as well, in terms of, the amount of cash in the system. The owners don't want to pay it out and then wait to get it back. They would rather just, let's figure this out now. And that's the part where I do sign with the players a little bit. Well, fuck you, right? Like, you wouldn't have done the same for us if we'd had to come back. So,
right. And the thing is, if you look at it, and we talked about this back in July and August, that it's escaping me. I've now
escrow.
Cut you short. Yeah, but the idea that you have... the idea that the 20% escrow was low, right?
Yes.
On the owner's side, you're like, what are you doing, man? That is, you are assuming a huge financial risk on your own for next season, not in the bubble or whatever you're going to do. But moving forward for the CBA term that you've signed this for, there's huge risk on the ownership side, right? So at that point you go, all right, well, they seem to be willing to do it, so go ahead. And so that to me is the flip side, is the one side. You look at the players, go, yeah, we signed that. We signed that in good faith. You know, it was a good deal. Sometimes it seems too good to be true.
Yeah.
Well, that's not my fault.
Go ahead.
But the point you raise is the flip side to that, right? At the risk of getting splinters in my ass from the fence post I'm sitting on, it is... that, yeah, you are in a 50-50 partnership, which the players lobbied hard to get. And so you say at the end of the day, yeah, do you want it now or do you want to pay for it later? Like, if you look at the Ottawa Senators, Thomas Chabot has an 8-year deal at $8 million per. Brady Tkachuk needs a new deal.
Right.
And you go, as if I'm Chabot, I'm like, I'm going to defer all day.
Yeah.
I'm going to defer all day, right? But then you go, that's going to crush somebody like the Senators' chances of signing Brady Tkachuk for the money that Tkachuk feels like he should or shouldn't deserve, because now, the cap is going to flatline or decrease.
But this is always the way these negotiations go, right? Is in terms of the players, kick it down the road, let it be someone else's problem. But long before they agreed to a cap, they did agree to a rookie cap when they first negotiated back in 04. Yeah, those kids coming behind me, they can be capped. I'm not being capped, right? Like, it always goes this way. Anyone who feels like they're close to retirement, let's just get our money now, and then when it's time to pay it back, I'll be fucking retired and out of here. So, right. This is going to be a mess. And Gary says... Go ahead.
No, you finish that. Gary says...
Gary said all the time when they do these negotiations that the players don't understand that it's the owners out here always taking the risk. Well, here it is, man. This is the risk. And you put it through and ran it anyway. And there's been tons of reports out this week saying... the owners, a lot of them, had no idea what they were agreeing unanimously to back in the spring when Gary pushed this through. He recommended this deal. They always go with him. And now that they've seen it and had some time to read it, they're just as furious with him as the players are. And a name that I keep hearing is Jeremy Jacobs, who's normally his like right-hand man, runs the Bruins, and is like the president of the owners' group, whatever they call them, right? The chairman. He's furious. He did not agree to this. He doesn't know how we got to this point. And that was the way, similarly to what Gary did to the players in terms of just get them in the bubble, just get it signed and get it done. The owners didn't get to see it either. And they're now looking at financial ruin in some of their other businesses going, fuck this, right?
Yeah. Well, and see, the thing is, Jeremy Jacobs, he would be just as fine not having a season.
Yep.
Right? Like he makes all his money through catering and concessions, and I think he's one of those guys who's been an absolute hawk through all these lockouts and negotiations.
What are you even doing here then, man? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Well, this is it, right? It's
sounds like you'd rather run the arena than a team.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Now, he's a billionaire and we are not.
Yeah.
But at the
fuck.
Exactly. Right?
That old trump card.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it comes down to it again, right? But yeah, we can only speak from the fan perspective. But yeah, to me, that's a guy who it doesn't matter what, unless he has, which is why I think he's been such a strong advocate and an ally of Bettman's, is Jacobs is absolutely a guy who is, if it's not our way, it's the highway, man.
Friedman says he's heard as high as 10 to 12 owners who may prefer to play or prefer not to play. He said most people, though, are telling him it's closer to six. But that he also believes there will be a season. They're counting badly on that American TV deal, so they can't be out of sight, out of mind, and they have to burn this year's contract, essentially, right? They got to get there. I can only imagine the damage that's already been done to that deal. Like, I can tell you as a Leaf fan, I needed that number to be big to help start pushing that cap up, and yeah. I that's obviously not going to happen now, so... it is interesting to think how many, did you make anything at all of, I'm sure you heard a couple of teams talking about at least playing some games outside.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's Carolina, it's Los Angeles, right? It's these sorts of
LA, there was 4 to 6 of them. Boston was one, LA and Anaheim, none of the Canadian ones, but that was based on, mostly our own. Whether you're outside or not, you still can't sell tickets, right?
You still can't gather.
Right. The thing I keep hearing against it is that it costs too much money to put on a Winter Classic, and I keep, like, don't rent fucking Fenway. Like, if you're just trying to get outside and sell 6,000 tickets, how about the high school football stadium down? Like, to me, there are ways of doing this that don't require the $1 million outlay of having the national media come in and setting up the spectacle that they do for the Winter Classic. You can scale this down. And
they're talking about millions of dollars per game.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't know what the breakdown is. Like, they were talking about the California teams, or at least two of them, sort of splitting on the cost of ice building and
so the
and
Kings
whatnot, right?
Own their ownership group owns the MLS team in LA. So they have a smaller soccer stadium there. And I guess they reached out to Anaheim to say, you know, we can use this building. Would you be interested in splitting the cost of running it?
On the ice generator.
Yeah. Which makes sense. And Carolina said flat out, we'll just buy our own. We're not going to, whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's the money that they're saving from leasing the franchise as opposed to buying it. Whatever crazy idea that is, and who knows who the ownership will be by the time, right? It may revert full back to what's his face that owned the Whalers
Carmanos.
Carmanos, which I think he still owns a team.
No, Tom Dundon.
I think what we heard was Tom Dundon had a couple year lease.
Oh.
With an ability to buy.
Okay. I'm not familiar
with
that. So to
me,
holy fuck.
And really that was floated
what a
about
shady ass league.
Well, and that was floated about a month ago probably, and I don't know how it didn't sort of show up on our radars in terms of the word out there is that Dundon doesn't own the team.
Wow.
That he is
like
sort
that
of
Spano guy and with the Islanders who never had any fucking money at all.
Yeah. Okay. Or Wong or any.
Yeah.
All these people who you're like, I don't know, man. It sounds a lot like the CFL, but neither here nor there. But yeah, so we'll leave that right where it is in that sort of, hey, that's interesting pile.
If it's true.
Yeah. Well, but no, I've heard from a bunch of reliable people, right? That it's not just like, this isn't just coming out of my pie hole. but we'll see, right? I'm sure Dundon will come out and say, I own this team. Yeah, but I don't believe you, man. I think you're shady as shit, right? So
I don't whatever. Think it has to, you know, like I think you can do outdoor games on the cheap. Now, some other owners who aren't able to do it have said, not only are we not interested in hosting them this way, we don't love the idea that when we go to Boston, we're outdoors, and then when we go to New York, we're indoors, and then, you know, we're off to Carolina and we're back outdoors. I don't know how much I care about that. If in certain jurisdictions they're able to pull in some cash, I think you should probably be trying to do that.
That's a Leaf fan speaking right there.
Okay, but the Leafs can't do it.
No, I mean, that just means it means dollars in. It means,
well, and that'd be the other interesting debate, though, right? Is, let's say Boston can do it. Does that become money that has to be spread across all the ownership groups because no one's making any money, or is that just Boston making money like they would in any other game? I don't know how that works.
Well, see, I don't think they have the revenue sharing like you do in,
right. So to me, that's just Boston will be lucky enough to sell tickets and Toronto won't, I guess.
Yeah. Well, last time I checked, Boston gets a shit ton of rain and other precipitation. I don't like their chances of pulling it off, period.
Right? It just you're right. It just seems silly to me that the first argument against it is always, well, it costs like $4 million to host a Winter Classic. Okay, don't host a Winter Classic.
Yeah.
Get into a park somewhere and just fucking...
Well, maybe you can go back to the Naval Academy again. Sure. That seemed to be... surely they're not going to charge you the exorbitant fee to be at Yankee Stadium or at Fenway or at, you know, any of those other places.
You referenced the CFL a little while ago and the Edmonton Football Club.
Is that what we're going with?
It seems to be. Well, that's their Twitter handle right now.
The Edmonton Football Club. And see, it's like when you talk about the Washington Football Club, we all were willing to go with Redskins for forever. And then it's like finally when the dumbass ownership said, all right, we're going to cave to the pressure. Now it's become like this totally taboo thing. And I'm not saying it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just saying now it's like, oof. That thing I said yesterday, every day for the previous whatever, I cannot say. And so it's interesting to see people's perspectives on things, right?
I do think there's a certain amount of look at us, how obvious we're making our change. Like, I can remember, I never even noticed it, but in an interview a few years ago, Jerry Howarth said, I haven't called the Cleveland Indians the Cleveland Indians in 30 years. They're just Cleveland when I go in there. Never drew attention to it, never said anything, just... Every time there would have been a time, you know, the Indians coming to the plate, it was always Cleveland coming to the plate. And no one noticed it, but that was just a thing that he did, right? And I think there was no reason for them to just not be Washington or Edmonton this year, but I don't know. Maybe people want to buy the Washington football team hat.
And I do see that Dan Snyder now in his great big fuck you to everybody is saying, yeah, we may just keep the name Washington Football Club. We may not ever go with anything else. You're like, of course. Yeah. Of course you will.
Until there's a chance to sell a new hat or a new t-shirt.
Well, as you said, you wait 5 years and you go, nah, forget it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Now we have a name.
Yeah, whatever. Warriors. That seems to be the... But anyways, Edmonton. You were talking about Edmonton, home of the... As I saw the other day, somebody said... I think a great name would be Rough Riders.
Of course.
So that is very CFL, right?
Of course.
That second one's still empty. We could handle that. The best one I saw was Yellow Greens. The Edmonton Yellow Greens. No?
As a Red Blacks fan, I object.
Yes. Yeah. I know, but it's just one of those things.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you have the list? I have the list right here in front of me.
All right. There was 10 names that have risen to the top of the pile. Rob's got them there.
Some are interesting. Some I find to be meh. And some I find to be ridiculous.
Okay.
But not one
more
of them
ridiculous
would I...
than the Yellow Greens?
No. No. But not one of them would I say jump out to me as excellent. And good listener, and Matt, you follow along here and you tell me what you think. The Edmonton Elk.
Nah.
The Edmonton Energy, the Edmonton Express, the Edmonton Eagles, the Edmonton Empire, the Edmonton Explorers, the Edmonton Edge, the Edmonton Elite, the Edmonton Extreme, the Edmonton Evolution.
Okay, so a couple there, not without their own controversy. How long before we're protesting the Edmonton Evolution?
Yes, that's bullshit. That whole Darwin nonsense, crapola.
And the Edmonton Empire is also something I might be shying away from if I was trying to not keep insulting the indigenous. The Elk sucks. I guess we're married to the double E, right? We like the helmet.
You save on a pile of cake. Right,
sure.
Nah,
fair enough. Right. So we're sticking to the double. The Evolution sucks. The Elk sucks. The Express is fine.
What do you like?
The Elite's fine. None of them are great, but
about Edge?
I don't hate the Edge.
What about the Explorers?
No, that sucks too. I'm not doing that.
Okay, what about Eagles?
Sucks.
Okay.
That's a high school football team name, right?
I know. You're that kid. Sucks. Yes. What do you want to go? It just sucks.
Well, and it's been done. We've already got a well-known Eagles football team. I'm not doing that.
Exactly. All right. I am the two or maybe three. If you were to shorten it down for me to three, I like the Elk.
Okay.
To me, you go with the quarter, the caribou, whatever. You just sort of go with that. I don't mind the Elk. I like the Express.
And
I don't mind the Edge. I'm not sure what that logo looks like.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the double E. That's it.
Yeah, no, for sure. But in terms of what else that looks like. But yeah, I think it's they are clearly... Yeah, we just want to ditch the Eskimos.
Well, and it's not that different than the Red Blacks wanted to keep the R, right? They were going to be married to the R.
For sure, absolutely. Yeah.
But it does hamstring you a little bit, and that's how evolution ends up on your
fucking
list.
It's not like, the E.
Yeah.
Not a lot of powerful E words, right?
Where it was one of them that you dropped. It was near the top of the list. That sounded more like the name of their cheer team. And I can't remember which one it was now.
Energy?
The Edmonton Energy is the cheer team that's coming out at halftime.
Come on, man.
Sure.
But that is, you are talking about, the whole oil patch, and you're talking
it's terrible.
A province. Now, Dean would have you, our good Western correspondent would have you believe that, really, and he came at me with if you knew anything about this, you'd know that that's going to happen south of Calgary. And I'm like, all right, you've clearly not taken any of this in the vein it was intended. But, wind, solar power, wind power, energy. We are an energy-friendly province.
Uh-huh. The Edmonton Pipeline. That's what I
that's land pipe. There, yes. Honestly, get a little David Wilcox out there every...
Yeah. Oh, now I'm getting into this.
See, there you go. Edmonton Energy, laying pipe. Come on, man. This is... make that happen.
It's winning me over.
All right.
See? David Wilcox there at the home opener every year.
Every game. Forget about it. What's he doing?
The new anthem singer.
What is it? And he just... Honestly, you do one of those mega mixes. You start out with O Canada... You get into a little Uptown, Bad Apple, and then you just finish with
Uptown
the rest of Organic.
Goes touchdown tonight.
For you. Woo! See, man, look at that. We're just knocking
it
around here.
This is done.
Edmonton, look to us.
The other thing, speaking of anthems, man, you see what happened to the Canucks anthem singer.
Good riddance, you fucking crazy douchebag.
I guess that means he knows what's up, or maybe just didn't like him to begin with. I think his name is Mark Donnelly.
It is.
And he was going to perform and sing at an anti-masker protest or whatever you want to call it.
It was We Love Christmas, friends and family gathering.
So the Vancouver Sun posts under their COVID-19 news that he's going to be a part of this. And Francisco Aquilini, owner of the Canucks, because the headline says Canucks anthem singer to perform at what an idiot conference or whatever it said. And Francisco Aquilini quote tweets it and says, "Hey, Vancouver son, how about you correct this to former Canucks anthem singer?" So, boom, canned. Now, I'm seeing that apparently the Canucks had already laid off a bunch of people. Maybe he was going to go anyway, and this was an easy excuse. I don't care. I thought that was a slam dunk, gorgeous tweet. Earned him some, you know, some PR points from a certain percentage of the fan base. Anyway, of course, their comments under everything is, so he can't have free speech or can't speak his mind.
Yet not when you have our name attached to it.
Right.
And,
if that's
and the
how
thing,
you're getting your bookings in here.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's a couple things, right? Good chum of the show, Steve Warren, he tweeted out, you know, how do we feel about this and sort of respond. And the flip side, the other tweet I saw on this was from Travis Yost, right? And he said, "My uncle died today from COVID-19.
Yep.
Shame on you, Mark Donnelly, right? Like, to me, this, and it was not just it was an anti-masker COVID deniers.
Yes.
Rally under the name of Gathering for Christmas. And as I said to, I replied to Steve and I said, I'm okay with you having your own opinion. To me, free speech is what it is.
Yeah.
But the end of the line is when you jeopardize my health and the health of my family and the people I love. And if I'm employing you, your ass is fired.
Yeah, man. Like, the freedom of speech is not freedom from consequence. Like, people need to get their heads around that. And this isn't a political. It's insane to me how political this has become, that the left supports staying alive and the right's like, fuck you, I have the right to die and kill you too if I want. I don't get it, man. I don't understand. And I don't think you can fire someone for having a different political view than you, but you can fire somebody for endangering lives and just deciding, I don't want this person associated with such a prominent public-facing brand.
Brand recognition, brand damage.
Yeah.
That's what, at the end of the day, you say.
You're going to have half the arena booing that guy when he starts the anthem from now on. You cool with that? Like,
well, and for those of you who may or may not be familiar with him, he's the guy you see in all of the blooper shows, the anthem singer who's skating around and he's singing "Oh Canada," and he trips over the red carpet and then barely breaks. He just straight back up and he's still singing. He kind of looks a little bit like a distant cousin of Ron Jeremy.
Maybe a little bit.
All right. And for those of you who don't know Ron Jeremy, look it up.
Not at work.
Yeah, not at work, for sure. For sure. But yeah, I just think at the end of the day, yeah, you got to know where your bread's buttered.
Yeah.
And you got to check the pulse. Maybe you are a COVID denier and an anti-masker. Whatever. Idiot. I don't agree. Yeah, for sure, man. But at the end of the day, that's your belief. Keep it in your own home. And if you think for a second, this may jeopardize my livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm livelihood strong. I'm not sure he makes his entire living off of singing the anthem at 41 Canucks home games because they never make the playoffs. So, yeah, and hold your tweets saying, yeah, we made it to the second round this year. Yeah, all right, whatever, every 50 years, the sun shines on every dog's ass. Good for you. But, yeah, I just think you have to understand that where you are and what you do and who you represent while you're not at work, especially when people are going to say things like, you know, Talkan Audio co-host Rob Christie is going to blank, blank, blank. And you go, okay, well, this, you know, that's, you're like, no, man.
Well, that's how not. It's going to get strong, right? Canucks anthem singer gives 300 people COVID. I'd really rather just part ways before my name is hung on that, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Anything else, man?
I was just interested in a quick hitter on that. You had passed along the Ovi poll.
So it was laid out there. I can't remember who posted the poll now, but essentially, how many goals has all these numerous work stoppages over the years cost Ovechkin? And we've debated over the years whether or not he has a shot at catching Gretzky. I think I was a little more bullish that it was on the table. But when you consider that he's now missed half of this season so far, we'll see how many games they're going to play. The 12-13 lockout that cost him half a season, the 04-05 lockout that cost him an entire season. That one, I've seen enough people debating, do we know for sure he would have come over from Russia for year one? I guess we don't technically know, but I assume he was. You know, the options were 61 plus, kind of 40 to 60, 10 to 20 or less than 10 or whatever it was. And the overwhelming majority said this has already cost him over 60 goals on what is going to be a tough chase if he's ever going to get to Wayne. And all of these in his prime, right? Like, these aren't, he lost a couple of games when he was 41, just kind of racking up 12 or 13. These are prime scoring years. What did you make of the results of the poll?
As I listen to it, I'm confused now. I read it to be, what has this pandemic stoppage cost him?
Oh, no, I think it says, because there's no way this pandemic has cost him the 61 plus that the overwhelming majority have voted for.
Those people are idiots.
Okay.
But at this point, when you include the lockouts, and had I read it all properly, to me, it's absolutely 60 plus.
Yeah. Let's assume, even in his rookie, because in his first year in the NHL, his rookie year, which turned out to be 05-06, he put up over 40 goals. So
he scored 50 goals.
Yeah. So let's call his rookie year 35.
Yeah.
Let's give him probably, well, you can track it out. The 12-13, they said it was 22 that he should have had. There were people in the comments underneath doing the math. Based on what he scored in the 48-game season, the games that he lost, he was on pace that would have been another 22.
Yeah.
And then this year, probably, you know, 10 plus so far.
You know, he would have lost at least, if you look at, he had 48 goals in 70-odd games.
Yeah.
Right? You know he's going to get five more, six more in the rest of that.
Yep.
And then if you end up playing a 56-game schedule, thus losing 26 more games, it's hard to say, because sometimes it's rough at the start of a season, although, two seasons ago he started it with 7 goals in his first 2 games. So, but I think it's safe to say you're risking another 17 to 20.
I was going to be a little lower than that. I was going to say at least 10 to 15. So,
go with 15.
Yeah.
Right, that's a nice soft between the two of us.
So
21 just in this stoppage then.
Yep.
And that's a low watermark.
And that's what a few people were saying. Like, all of these are fairly conservative, right? So in terms of that 30 to 35 in year one, since he put up 50 in his actual rookie year, it's not crazy to think it might have been 40, you know, had he gotten that 04-05 season. So these are huge numbers when you're talking about a race that's going to be close. It's going to be tight to the finish. And it led other people to start making tweets about Jágr, who also missed the 04-05, plus a couple seasons in the KHL, plus the 95 lockout, and that he would have been right around 825, and maybe he, you know, it gets close. It gets interesting. Maybe you're more motivated. Maybe
Jágr's a guy who spent 5 years playing somewhere else because he owed the IRS a pile of cash. So, like, let's look at self-inflicted issues. And you go, if that guy was playing, you know, all the time, if he hadn't gambled away his huge earnings, then you'd be fine. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to come down to the goals per games played.
Yeah.
That's probably more the record that he's going to own.
And you got to look at era now. Like, and we've had this discussion. Like I said, I'm more bullish on the fact that he could have caught Wayne, but I think we both agree, given the era, he's probably the greatest goal scorer ever, right? Like, given the way they play.
I'm not even sure that's in doubt.
Right.
Now, right? I'm not sure who you are that you have to think that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Because, he's played through an era where scoring was drastically, drastically reduced. Yeah,
goalies are huge and the equipment's huge and defense is better.
I think is the, And no offense to Darren Pang. But...
I'm doing it. I'm offending Darren Pang right
This guy's 5'3" or whatever he is, right?
And, can't even reach the crossbar.
Well, this is it. Reaching up, right? And so, you know, if you look at a pile of Gretzky's goals, like even those highlight ones where, like, where he scores on Vernon, that one where he's coming down down the left wing and he's takes that slapper and he beats Vernon from, I don't know, 80 feet out over the glove. And you're like, come on, man, that is never happening today.
No, there's some terrible shit. I saw Jeff Fayette, who's been on this show a time or two. He tweeted out in response to, you know, some of the goaltending comparisons when having this debate in the air. And he's like, no goalie before. He said, my opinion is that Patrick Waugh invented goaltending and Dominic Hasek perfected it. And anybody who came before those guys is irrelevant. Just you watch him just kind of kicking at it, right?
Or standing there. you're right, kicking at it. Like you feel like, you look like a 7-year-old Rob Christie at soccer. You know, the ball's coming, you're like, I missed it. Fuck it, whatever. Right, got my foot sort of waving high, waist height.
Where's my orange slice?
Missed it. Yeah, okay, all right. I want a popsicle, man. Don't bring me that orange slice bullshit. That's okay at halftime, but right. I'm looking for a solid creamsicle post game.
So it's just an interesting debate. And when we do continue on eventually and we see where Ovi ends up, he may decide, you know, I want to finish my career in Russia and stuff like that. But you'll have to look at all of these sorts of things, how many games were sliced out of the prime of his career and go, oh yeah, maybe he might have got there. And
well,
just makes it interesting.
Two things there, right? First of all, Gretz scoring a pile of goals on goalies in narrow pads and not going down.
Yep.
You're like, yeah, but you look at the difference between him and his next, you know, the guy behind him.
Yeah.
It's huge.
No, for sure.
So this isn't a slag on Gretz, because Gretz was still scoring 30% more than everybody else.
Yes.
If you look at the goals per game that Ovi's going to rack up, I think at the end of his career, he will be the goal scoring king. And I wouldn't have said that a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Probably on this podcast, I probably balked at that. But here we are, and I think it's likely going to be hard to refute.
Fucking Russians. I think we liked our good little Canadian boy being...
Of course we do. Everything is slanted through that lens, man. Yeah. But sometimes the numbers are overwhelming.
Anything else?
No, man, that's all I got. I'm hoping like hell, right? All I want for Christmas is regular season hockey.
Yes. Well, and we'll get to it maybe next week when they're finally allowed into their hotel rooms, what this World Juniors is going to look like as the Canadian team was quarantined with COVID cases and a couple of top players for Finland and Sweden have had to be removed because of positive tests. This is going to be a fucking mess too. So
not to mention Hughes, Kako, and Lafreniere not going, but that's a story for another day, ladies and gentlemen.
Lots of time to talk about the World Juniors. On that note, don't forget, we're going to have Gord Miller coming up here in the next week or two. So stay tuned for that. We will, of course, talk to him about the World Juniors, huge part of his career. And lots more good stuff to come before we get to the holidays and, of course, the World Juniors, should those be allowed to go. We'll see how many people get into this fucking bubble healthy. But as he said, that's for another day. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio, and we'll catch you all later.
See ya.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.